Hello, I'm Dr. Mark Bleacher, co-director of cataract and primary eye care at Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia. Welcome to Medscape Ophthalmology Insights, coming from the American Academy of Ophthalmology meeting in New Orleans. This is part of a series of commentaries produced in cooperation between Medscape and Wills Eye Hospital. Joining me today are Dr. Joanna Fisher and Dr. Brandon Ayers of Wills Eye Hospital. Dr. Fisher is a member of the cataract and primary eye care service, and Dr. Ayers is a member of the cornea service at Wills Eye. Today we'll be discussing were some of the more exciting developments in cataract and refractive surgery that we found at this year's meeting. One of the things that's been a topic that's been discussed very actively the last few years, become almost a new catchphrase, is refractive cataract surgery. So Brandon, you know, we're talking about not just taking out the cataract safely, effectively, efficiently, we're talking about improving patients' visual function beyond what they lost from cataract. What do you think?
You know, over the past couple of years, and especially at this year's meeting, we've run into this almost relentless pursuit of emmetropia in using all different technologies to try and achieve that, all the way on the front end from trying to get better biometry and better measurements, all the way through treatment, doing the surgery more accurately, through checking your IOL powers on the back end. So there's been a big paradigm shift here with just doing the lens, cataract, and being safe to now really maximizing the postoperative outcome.
So, Joanna, do you think everyone buys into this? Is every cataract surgeon interested in doing refractive cataract surgery?
I think everybody is interested, Mark. I think now, you know, it's here. It's accepted. I think the issues will be of how we are incorporating it into our practices. The financial challenges that we are facing, I think, are significant.
Right. We have all these new technologies. They're not cheap, and Lord knows we're not getting paid more money to do surgery, and our facilities are not getting paid more either. So it's a challenge. Let's talk about the big elephant in the room, which is femtosecond laser surgery for cataracts. Brandon? I mean,
lasers are cool. Everybody likes lasers. And a year or two ago, the big question was, are lasers going to actually take off? Is this something that's actually going to happen? And this year, I think people have said, it's going to happen. Now, how do I integrate the laser into my practice? And that's not easy because it's an expensive machine. There's multiple platforms. They all have their pluses and minuses. But I think people now accept that laser cataract surgery is here to stay. Now, how do I make use of that?
Right. Brandon, you have a laser at the surgery center you operate at. We have one at Wills downtown. Joanna, you're not downtown that often, occasionally. Is this a technology that's going to draw you downtown to do more surgery? Are you going to buy one for the center where you work at primarily?
Well, Wills is looking at bringing this technology to one of the surgery centers where I work, so I'm definitely very interested in that.
And you think your patients will be that interested as well?
Patients are asking for it.
They're asking for it.
So I need to make sure that I can offer it.
All right. So you think this will have wide acceptance in your practice?
I definitely believe so.
Even if they have to pay for it?
Well, I think that's going to be something we'll have to work out.
Right.
You know, the financial aspect is definitely challenging. Yeah. But I tell you, as a surgeon, the first time you step on that pedal and you watch the decisions be made almost magically, it's like watching Star Wars. It's really cool.
Well, I think the accuracy of it is, you know, amazing.
And that's the advantage, is trying to improve the precision of cataract surgery. Again, the endless pursuit of emmetropia, all through lasers.
And this definitely gives us some new modalities for doing that as well. So now that we've got the cataract taken care of, we want to enhance visual functioning. And the hot topic, the holy grail of ophthalmology, is presbyopia correction. And we've had earlier attempts at that were not overly successful. They've been getting better, newer technology lenses. Where do you think we are with that, Brandon?
You know, I think that presbyopic correction is really in its infancy. And I think going forward, a presbyopic correction is going to almost become a specialty in itself because we can do it so many different ways, lens-based with pseudo-accommodative and diffractive IOLs. And now there's a whole population out there who just missed the ship and they've already had their cataract surgery. They've got good distance vision, but they weren't able to get a multifocal lens. So that's where we're starting to target the cornea as a tool to improve near vision and correct presbyopia.
Yeah, I've seen some good studies and good results from the camera intracorneal inlay, which is a pinhole inlay, and the raindrop refractive inlay. And even though they have not been approved yet, the scuttlebutt is good, and we're hoping that the FDA will have it. Joanna, do you think your cataract patients have already been operated on are going to go back and want to get this to cure their presbyopia?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. No, I already have patients who are coming in for their second eyes, and they had their first eye corrected for distance, and now they want to have better near vision. So obviously we'll have multifocal lenses now that I can offer them. But there's a lot of patients who, over the last 20 years I've operated on, who now have excellent distance vision but miss that near acuity.
So we have these workarounds for presbyopia. But the real cure for presbyopia is a truly accommodating IOL, which we don't really have yet. And I was at the ESCRS meeting in Amsterdam, and I saw some papers of some cutting-edge technology using microchips implanted in the lenses to drive accommodative shifts in the optic, using the electric potential of the iris and the pupil movement and the ciliary body contraction to cause accommodation of the lenses. So I think there's a bunch of years yet before this becomes available here, but it's exciting to see that there's new technology still down the road.
No doubt. I think that down the road, a true accommodative IOL is the way things are going to go. No light splitting, great vision.
Absolutely. So let's move from the lens back to the cornea, and let's talk about another hot topic that, again, keeps getting talked about, a lot of excitement, but the FDA is a little slow on the uptake here. That's collagen cross-linking for the cornea. Where do we stand with that, Brandon? Do you think it's going to be available anytime soon?
That's the eternal question, is collagen cross-linking. You know, there's a large population of keratoconic patients. There's another population of ectasia patients after LASIK. And we all think that collagen cross-linking works. The trick is getting enough patients to the FDA where we can prove that it works. And I do think it's out there. I think in the next couple of years we'll have FDA approval to do cross-linking. Right now you have to be in a research study. But there's more to cross-linking than just keratoconus and ectasia. Now, we're starting to use collagen cross-linking to selectively modulate the biomechanics of the cornea to be an actual refractive procedure. So instead of using lasers to thin the cornea, we're using light to modify the cornea, changing the shape, again, improving emmetropia.
So what do you think, epi on or epi off?
If it's my cornea, epi on.
Okay. Joanna, you have a lot of refractive patients who need cross-linking. Do you think this is meeting some need, or is this just, you know, something for the subspecialist who treats these difficult cornea patients?
I think I will defer all those patients to Brandon.
Great.
Very good. One of the other things that gets a lot of press at the Academy every year are innovative surgical techniques. And we have a lot of our colleagues coming from abroad, particularly from India, doing the most amazing surgical gymnastics in terms of resuturing, repositioning IOLs. Is there anything new there? We've seen changes in suturing IOLs and in gluing IOLs. We have a lot of patients that need that whose lenses are moving on us.
Well, hopefully not that many. But you know, you want to be familiar with the technology, and you want to have at your disposal all those different sutures or suturing techniques that you can use during more difficult cases.
Well, I mean, with patients getting older, we're going to have a lot of older pseudo exfoliation patients, so we're going to start to see, I think, IOLs moving a little bit more frequently. And you're right, we need to have a variety of different ways. What do we need to be updated on?
Well, you know, you're right. I think pseudo-exfoliation is going to be a problem. It is a problem, and it's going to become a bigger problem. So we're seeing a lot more sublux lens in the bag type situations where we're having to go back and refixate an IOL. And remember, we live in Philadelphia where people aim for the eye, and we're still going to have traumatic injuries with dislocated lenses and aphakia. The two things that I've seen the most at this meeting are the use of Gore-Tex suture for suturing lenses, which got a much longer retention life than the proline that we used to use. Mm-hmm. And this used to be bounced around here and there by a few surgeons, but now on the big screen, we're seeing Gore-Tex being used. And we can't forget about the glued IOLs. So this is using the haptics of the IOL itself to self-fixate itself in scleral channels.
That's a really challenging technique, though. I've been to several of the symposia here and instructional courses, and it looks really great, but like a lot of these fancy new techniques, the number of cases that are left on the cutting room floor vastly exceeds the pretty ones that wind up being presented from the podium. Is this something that I'm going to be able to do, or Joanna's going to want to do, or we're going to have to send it to a specialist?
You know, I'm not sure who really wants to do them, but I can tell you over the past couple years, we've gone from trying to do this surgery with monkey wrenches and pliers, which just aren't meant for the anterior segment, but there's been a lot of development in smaller gauge anterior segment instruments, which now allow this complicated surgery to be done with relative ease. And so I think suture lenses, refixating lenses, and even these glued lenses are certainly within the reach of any ophthalmologist as long as you've got the right tools.
Well, I think I'm going to wait for the iris claw lens to be approved in the U.S. for aphakic correction. So I think that's going to be certainly theoretically easier for more surgeons to do than some of these fancy gymnastics. The other thing that was big here that the Academy rolled out was the iris data registry. And we've all heard, you know, we're going to do great surgery, but we have to collect the data and prove it. You know, if we want to show that we really do bring value to our patients and value to healthcare, you know, the outcomes are important. It's yet to be seen how it's specifically going to roll out in any one practice, but I'm encouraged to see that they've already talked to all the EHR vendors and they're working with them to be able to do this. I was very concerned that I was going to be asked to have my staff start to pull all this data so the academy can generate the numbers. You'd be willing to share your numbers? You think this is a good idea, Joanna?
I think it's a very important part of, you know, improving our outcomes, I think, and it starts with data collection, so it has to start in our offices. I would have no problem sharing that information. Ultimately, it'll improve what we do, and it'll help our patients get better vision.
I think with some of the changes being foreseen with Obamacare, outcomes and efficacy are going to be really important, and it's going to affect how you get paid, it's going to affect your access to patients, your participation in accountable care organizations.
Absolutely.
So I think it's inevitable. I'm happy to see the Academy getting out ahead of that. You know, whenever you start big programs like this, you're always concerned that it's going to be difficult to implement, so be watching that carefully.
I think that registry is going to be great. It's going to really help us with patient outcome and be able to quickly collect a lot of data to see if things are working or not working. But it is a little bit of the Big Brother thing where we could be easily compared against each other, and I may, you know, run around with my tinfoil hat on trying to avoid some exposure.
So one last clinical question. Intraocular antibiotics after cataract surgery or not? Do we follow the European model?
Yes or no?
Yes or no?
I do. I inject.
You inject?
I inject.
What do you inject?
Vancomycin.
Okay.
I do not.
You do not?
I use postoperative antibiotics. Okay.
You should.
But I use betadine.
Okay.
So I think most of our viewers know that the ESCRS study was a multi-country, multi-center study that showed very clear efficacy of intraocular ceftaxime at the end of routine cataract surgery, and in many cases not associated with any additional topical antibiotics. The ESCRS just revalidated that study with even better numbers. But yet in the U.S., there's very few people who are doing that. It would be nice, partially because we don't have access to sterilely packaged non-preserved antibiotic that we can use at the time of surgery that's cost-effective. But I'd be interested in seeing whether that gains any traction here, and actually interested to see if we can pull maybe a study together to try and source that appropriately and use it.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Wills is the place to do it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for today. I want to thank Dr. Joanna Fisher and Dr. Brandon Ayers for being here. This is Dr. Mark Bleacher from Medscape Ophthalmology in Wills Eye Hospital. Thank you for joining us.